When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello again and welcome back to Shake Them Ropes. My name is Chris Novembrino. I am leading off today. Joining me, as always, is the Iron Man of Shake Them Ropes. Never misses a show. Jeff Hawkins, how you doing, Iron Man?
Yes, what is it, six or seven years now, running. Haven't missed a week. Feel every moment of it.
And sometimes great lengths are taken to ensure that you don't miss a week. But yes. I think it's a worthy endeavor.
What am I being set up for here? That's what I'm suspicious.
You're not being set up for anything. I'm kudoing your Iron Man status.
I'm Charlie Watts.
I'm settling it. No, you're not Charlie Watts. Rest in peace, Charlie Watts. Charlie Watts. And I was just settling into my hosting status here this week. I know we're going to get into the news section here in a little bit. Later on the show, a much-awaited debut is occurring. I'm excited about this one. I'm excited about this, people.
I'm not really sure what this is. That's the problem, is you're buttering me up for this, but continue.
I'm not buttering you up for anything. I'm going to lead off with a news story, and then we're gonna pivot on it. So this week, for those of you who have been following the news in the wrestling community, Pat McAfee was diagnosed with COVID-19. And what's interesting about Pat McAfee, and by interesting, I frankly mean a little bit alarming, is that Pat McAfee was fully vaccinated and he still had what appears to be a breakthrough case. He appears to be in good spirits. I mean, God love the guy. He's doing his podcast and his vodcast from his bed while recovering from COVID-19. That is commitment. I don't know. I'd probably at least do one episode, but I feel like at a certain point I would just want to swoon and sleep. So God love Pat McAfee for that. But I just want to say this to everyone who's listening to the show, because I hear sometimes about other radio hosts who maybe don't use their platform for the best information on this stuff, and so I kind of want to make sure I do the right thing with my own platform. In my life this week, Jeff, someone I know, and we can get into some more details, but a musician from the community, I've told you about this person before in the past, I found out that this person had been staying active during this time, but had not gotten vaccinated, and decided to have an album release party for his upcoming album that was coming out, or is set to come out here. And at that album release party, this person got COVID-19. He got the Delta variant of COVID-19, and he is now in the hospital. He is over $120,000 in debt. He has a collapsed lung. He has pneumonia. He has been intubated. He will be lucky to get out of the hospital and make some sort of recovery. But his musical career right now is very much in question and looks very much in doubt. So if you are someone who is watching this show or listening to this show, and you have been waiting for the FDA approval or for some other mile marker, friend, let me tell you this. Check your bank account right now and ask yourself, do I have $120,000 in there that I'm willing to part with for COVID-19? Because you might not have to spend all of it, but you very well could. And the information seems to say that if you're not vaccinated, your odds of facing this situation are fairly, they're not unheard of in this time. So please, if you have not gotten vaccinated, I urge you, consider the circumstances, consider the risks, and go and get the shot, please.
I agree. And if you do have $120,000, just lying around.
Whoa, bro, like Shake Them Ropes is here.
Red
like 60K
Circle.
For Nov, 60K
Red Circle,
for Hobbits.
Find our show. There's a donation button there. I will take no donations lower than 20. maybe a 5. I'll take a 5. Maybe a 10. I don't know.
But yeah, please, people, yes, if please. You're going to attend these live events and everything, don't mess around with this. Better safe than sorry. Take a conservative, safe approach to this. Do not expose yourself to unnecessary risk.
Yeah, and it's going to take a couple weeks for that thing to kick in, so... You know, give it some time too before you go. Oh, I got the shot. I can go right back out there. No, yeah. I SummerSlam was mostly an outdoor arena. That's the thing that. But then again, McAfee also travels private, so it might have been there. He has a family. Might have been a family thing. Might have been at whatever hotel he was staying at for this thing. I don't know if it was a fly in and out type of thing. He seemed to think he got it at SummerSlam though. So. If you happen to go, and this is one of the reasons why I personally avoid it, go get yourself tested. Just, you know, and then if you're positive, just stay away from people for a while. That's all we ask.
And for my part, I attended Raw. So I have attended a live event since things have reopened. But the entire time I was inside the American Airlines Arena, I had my mask on. Other people didn't. And we actually had, you know, some space around our seats and everything like that. But look, better safe than sorry. Like at bare minimum, even if you want to go, oh, you would just get sick. Guys, getting sick sucks. Don't kid yourself. Like, getting sick is not like some fun, cool time. You should just try to avoid getting sick generally.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, getting sick, it'll just be sick for a short time. You don't know that. You don't know what kind of underlying conditions you have that might mix with this thing and, you know... You know what I'm saying. I'm trying to keep it light here, but yeah.
I think, for sure. Like, yeah, I try to keep it light, but this story has touched me directly, and it's sort of really moved me this week.
No, I understand
like,
that.
No, yeah, well, you know, I got to say something on this. Like, guys, don't end up like my friend. Like, let that story be a cautionary tale.
I definitely agree. Trying to pivot to wrestling.
Absolutely, Jeff. Although, we have a lot of news this week and plenty to talk to involving SummerSlam, Takeover, the changes in NXT, and of course Dynamite and Rampage as well.
What a perfect segue, because the new NXT is a coming, Chris. And did you see this logo? Did you see this bright colory Technicolor puke of a logo that they have?
I saw something worse that I'm now never going to be able to unsee. Okay, so it's like the time I realized that the Spotify logo is actually slightly askew. I saw a video earlier today that tried to find the symmetry point in the new NXT logo, and it is not straight through the X because of that stupid little horn that they put on the T. So, like, the actual visual midpoint in this new logo does not sit anywhere comfortable. The color scheme, not bad, but this lack of symmetry is going to drive me crazy for the rest of this logo's lifespan.
Well, last week we told you about the internal policy of no one over 30, no one under 6'2". This week, Chris, new internal quote-unquote policy, NXT will no longer be scouting independent talent. What does this mean for you, the wrestling consumer? Well, it means that you're going to get a lot more college football players, amateur wrestlers, track stars, whatever, into the performance
center. So you're
center.
Saying Tino Sabatelli has a chance?
Third time's a charm with Sabatelli. Me and bring him, and then Rob will come back to the show weekly once he's back. But you know, also this means, you know, Maxim model lingerie models and, you know, hot women that creepy guys can ogle over, and they're gonna try and turn them into wrestlers. This does not necessarily mean though that if you're good on the independents, they won't try and sign you up. That's the weird thing, is there's always weird exceptions to this. I don't understand this, to be honest with you. I understand that we're going to teach them our style. Okay, great. The things that they look for, to me, are ridiculous. I understand it, but I also understand that WWE is not a promotion that caters to me. Halfway through this week, I wrote to you about this was it cerebral palsy kid who ran into Shotzi Blackheart at a theme park and just gave her a big hug. And you see the John Cena cricket wireless thing with the kid whose mom had a, you know, don't give up, wristband from Cena, and that helped her beat cancer. Those are the people that WWE is for. It's not for people like me. It is into spectacle. It is into the larger than life aspects of it. Some of these guys are going to pan out. Most aren't, which is, you know, and the weird thing to me is, you know, you've had guys like this in there and you've trained them, and then you just cut them when you're done with them, and they don't really know quote unquote wrestling. They know WWE. So, I've rambled on enough.
No, yeah, I do have thoughts. I think what's interesting about the we're going back to taking models and former athletes and trying to make them stars again. Obviously, there's the wrong-headed nature of, you know, trying to build something from the ground up versus actually trying to take someone who wants to be a wrestler by trade and making them better what they already are. And obviously there is the sort of ceding of the territory to AEW, which yeah. I think is probably strategically wrongheaded. But to take the thought in a slightly different direction, I think the economics of this and the market value of this is really suspect too, because you are taking these people who are athletes. You're going to pay them to train. And yes, what they get paid in the NXT system, and I assume this will only be more true in this new era where these people come in with really no market value as wrestlers, is going to be low. It'll probably be between like $40,000 and $50,000. You're still, in a way, overpaying these people because none of them are any good at wrestling. They're sort of not worth what you're paying them until they actually prove that they can be draws. And then you look at the history of WWE's ability to convert this type of template to successful wrestlers, and it's really patchy. The actual conversion rate on this model is fairly low. So I think they are going to be overpaying for people who are going to be underdrawing. And so I think beyond it being strategically the wrong move, because the marketplace of fans wants to see people like Adam Cole get pushed. They want to see people like, you know, 5'8", not necessarily a body guy. They want to see someone like that held in high regard in the promotion, pushed at a high level. Wrestling fans do.
Yes, but again, wrestling fans and WWE fans.
WWE fans are, there's a divergence.
There's a Venn diagram.
However, yeah. Heretofore, over the last 20 years, WWE's formula for filling the house and paying the bills has been the WWE fans and also wrestling fans who still watch WWE, namely because it's the only game in town. And that they've had nothing to measure it up against. And AEW is a legitimate alternative promotion with enough on-air television that if you want to do the AEW lifestyle between the online shows and Dark Elevation, and now Rampage as well, in addition to, of course, obviously Dynamite every week, there's a lot of AEW. It can be your full week. It can be your full wrestling lifestyle. You have a legitimate alternative now. And WWE, I think with this retool, is not going to replenish the pool of WWE fans to compensate for the lost wrestling fans.
The thing that I find ironic about this is some of their most successful programs over the last, let's say, decade are taking a guy that the wrestling fans like and purposely pitting them against the quote unquote WWE guys. And then they find out that, yeah, it's the wrestling guy that's carrying this feud for the most part. That's the thing that always shocks them. It's like, wait, people want Daniel Bryan over Batista and Randy Orton for the title?
Wait, people what? Like CM Punk more than John Cena?
Yeah. Huh? What? No. We're giving it. No, we have to beat this out of them. And it's always a fight. And it's always one of those things where it's like, it's still an enjoyable program, but you can tell that the wrestling guy is the guy really carrying this feud versus the WWE product. You know, see, you know, for lack of a better term, the Fiend was interesting. But, you know, he'd have to rely on a guy like Rollins to carry him through the feud for the most part. It's just an interesting dichotomy, I think. So Brock Lesnar's back, kids. And if you didn't know, it was confirmed. This is Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer, giving attribution where it is needed, said that it was confirmed by those closest to the situation that it was literally a last minute deal that was put together for a number of reasons, all in some form related to Fox, CM Punk showing up in AEW, and John Cena leaving. Noting Punk's positive relationship with Fox from the WWE backstage days, Meltzer said the network was upset at WWE for not making a big offer to Punk to keep him from going to AEW, and that politically, WWE, quote, felt the need to get Lesnar and Becky Lynch to SmackDown right away. Now, Brian Alvarez this afternoon added a nice little piece of information that I didn't know. Fox didn't know that CM Punk was going to AEW and that he was going to debut in AEW. And it was a shock to them. And they are pretty sore already at WWE because USA gives all this free advertising to that streaming service, Peacock, which is owned by the same parent company. Fox isn't getting anything out of that. And Fox is trying to launch its own similar streaming service. So now we have a very... Fox has always kind of been smacked around by WWE. I mean, we've been talking about this for
years.
I want
to know the TikTok of when Fox found this out, because it's not as though the CM Punk thing has been the best kept secret in professional wrestling. So when did Fox find this out? Because that tells us a little bit too about how closely they're following things.
Chris, do you think that there are Fox Sports executives or Fox Network executives sitting around reading Body Slam or Fightful or Figure Four on a regular basis? Or do you think it was because of all these things like Forbes or whatever coming out with these what are basically promotional pay. I mean, they're not regular columnists, but you know, the type of articles where CM Punk is changing the wrestling landscape, blah, 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 blah. And they go, wait, what? We thought he was our guy. I'm sure somebody was on the phone pretty damn quick on Saturday morning saying, hey.
Oh, yes. Because for an important piece of context is that CM Punk's first return to wrestling since his hiatus was talking about wrestling nominally after on Fox. So at one point, there was ink between Fox and CM Punk. And mm-hmm. I'm sure the executive at Fox thought that, well, it clearly could have been a possibility to get him back on Fox. If we had some sort of deal, maybe we could have gotten him back to WWE. Now, to that point, I think it also misunderstands CM Punk's position. So I think this reveals another failing on the Fox network. Like, they weren't abreast of the CM Punk situation. But, like, if they were aware of the actual Punk situation, he was not gettable. Like, he was not going to come back from retirement to come back to WWE.
No, that all they saw was that first rating he spiked on FS1 that one time, and they just, wait, what, you let this guy go? What are you talking about? Type of thing. Yeah.
In a weird way, I almost got to come in defense of WWE here. They had no chance in getting CM Punk back. They like.
Wait, Chris, you don't think they? Hey, you know what? Hey, Phil, this is. This is Paul. You want a main event WrestleMania this year? Hey, come on, we can make that happen for you. All you gotta do is sign on the dotted line. Come on. And like Vince and Bruce are in the back, you know, just laughing, you know, waiting for, come on, we can get him this time. Just reel him in, Paul.
The contract that he would have to get would be like an NBA contract. Yeah, an NBA contract for WWE.
I want ownership of the company. I want 15% of the company in order to come in. I'm going to vote all you bastards out. That's what it be. Well, if you're watching on video, Chris kind of has the Steve Winwood Valerie thing going for his video. Only a Steve Winwood guy here. Are you still with me on audio at least, Chris? Okay. Next story, Cassidy Haynes of BodySlam.net tonight dropping some news. Daniel Bryan, a.k.a. Bryan Danielson. I wrote that down wrong. That's my fault for transcribing his prisoner name. Bryan Danielson set to debut at All Out. He was originally scheduled to debut at Arthur Ashe Stadium, but moved up to keep the buzz from CM Punk going. Chris, this says one thing to me. This says to me, Adam Cole's debuting at Arthur Ashe Stadium. That's going to be the surprise there.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was thinking him debuting at All Out means Angle. Like, it's not going to be CM Punk's speech. It's going to be Daniel Bryan comes out. He starts giving a speech, but this ends with some sort of Angle to set up his first feud. I think this is a smart move. I mean, I think you could have even made the argument for have a similar episode of Rampage this week just to keep Rampage strong and really anchor down the brand. If it were me, I would have probably done that versus have him coming out at All Out. But, you know, look, keep the momentum going. Absolutely. I think they need to keep dropping big debuts as long as they can here for, like, the fall season. Like, you obviously can't do a big debut every week, right? But, like, right now, absolutely, because every one of these big debuts is kind of landing like a punch in WWE's face, yes. And they are panicking, and they are making mistakes doing this, so keep putting the pressure on them.
My weird idea was that Daniel Bryan, I gotta stop calling him that, the Danielson comes out, I almost called him Dragon.
I like the Danielson, yes.
That he comes out and he starts doing another heartfelt speech like Punk, and then Adam Cole with no music or announcement just runs in and starts beating the crap out of him mid speech. That would just freak people out on all levels. But
I want him to face off with Malakai Black. I think that we'll get in when we talk about Dynamite, but I really think at this point Black needs to be paired against a can't miss babyface, and with Paige out of the scene right now, I think Daniel Bryan's the right answer.
Well, good numbers all around for AEW this week. I mean, 1.129 for Rampage last week. They beat the Challenge, I believe, in the demo this week, which is big for them because the Challenge is a big time type show. Let's talk a little AEW as a respite, if you will.
Oh, yeah. Real quickly, on the Rampage numbers, I think the CM Punk Eternal number is even more impressive of 1.3 mil. I mean, you look at that, it's just like, whoa.
Yeah,
Seismic shift. This company, AEW, needs to start moving more television through Punk. Don't overexpose him, but like once we get through this little Darby thing, he needs to start being a major plot point in every episode of Dynamite.
Let's lazy river this thing and just start talking about different wrestling. And then I know we have an ad read somewhere in here and you can just interrupt and do it then. This follow-up for Punk, I didn't like it. I know that we were trying to do like a little bit of a cool down because we have a pay-per-view in a week, but you have all this buzz going in to, hey, Punk's also going to be on this Dynamite. Now, I'm not saying you open with him again, I'm not saying that at all. They open with Matt Hardy and Orange Cassidy. Now look, to wrestling fans and to especially fans of ironic wrestling, Orange Cassidy's great. Matt Hardy is a known commodity. Is that the match that you would put on if you knew that you had a new wave of lapsed fans coming in to watch this program? To me, it's not. To me, you put on Moxley and Eddie Kingston versus a team. Maybe even
I actually lead off with a cruiserweight match. I go classic WCW. We're trying to get lapsed fans back in. I want high flying. I want crisp action. Maybe you have Rey Fénix against name your other quality luchador.
But these are lapsed WWE fans who want to see Punk. So the Matt Hardy part was smart. I got that part. I mean, it wasn't a bad match. Don't get me wrong. It was a pretty good match, but it was kind of, it wasn't what I would put on to say, hey, this is the new kind of wrestling that, you know, this is where, you know, all the guys that you know, if you don't like their presentation, come over to us type of thing.
I think Orange Cassidy is such an inside joke sort of character that it is the wrong person to lead off with. Have Orange Cassidy somewhere in the show. You do need to introduce the new fans to this guy, but I would almost have Orange Cassidy spotlighted as someone, you know, who's really Johnny Cool Guy. This match, it oddly enough with Cassidy, the matches are in a weird way like the least interesting part of the character or the least resonant part of the character. The vibe of the character is the whole selling point. And
yes,
Matt Hardy and the Hardy family office angle stinks. Like it's absolutely a replaceable heel faction.
The thing is, they're getting bigger. They are like the largest faction in AEW, because I think they just added Penelope Ford this week. I think she's going to now be a part of it. So you have like three tag teams that are part of this. It just keeps growing. But I like the Matt character. It was just the Delete versus whatever the heck Orange Cassidy's slacker type thing.
Yeah, the slack,
it was a comedy match. It was a comedy match for a while.
And even, okay, again, we're talking about Laps fans here. Do these Laps fans, well, I guess they sort of know Delete, but like if they're Laps WWE fans,
they don't know Delete
was not really, yeah, right. No. Delete was not, right. They never saw the final deletion. Like, so, I mean, it was the wrong foot to lead off with.
Yeah.
So and, I completely agree with you.
And to me, it's like, we have all these fans coming in. If WWE, it'd be like leading off with Santino Marella to me. That's what it felt like to me. Between Dynamite and Rampage, did they make the right decision on the tag team tournament?
No. I think that the mishandling of Jack Perry and the Jurassic Express stuff is really baffling. I mean, I didn't like the tag tournament in the first place. I thought that the Jurassic Express should have
just declare them. Just declare them. Well, yeah, get into that a little bit with SmackDown. But I understand their thinking here. Their thinking here is that, look, the Bucks and the Lucha Brothers tear it down every time they're against each other, and that's what we're going for is we're going for that, for lack of a better term, PWG, which I didn't get tickets to this time. Kind of upset. I was right there on time, 8 o'clock. Boom. Nope. No more tickets. Like, really? Anyway, they want the Meltzer 5-star ratings for every match on this, I think. And I don't know. I mean, I understand that Luchasaurus is not, he has a ceiling to him. I get that. I get that Jungle Boy is your star in the making. I also get that the kind of the New Japan thinking of you go on a journey with this guy as he loses and he loses over the years, and then one day it all clicks for him. I just think right now that they have so many guys that are coming and they have an embarrassment of riches out there that they can pull from. You gotta start feeding us a little bit that you're gonna be, that this is a guy that's gonna be a future building block of your company. And I think the tag team titles are important for him because he doesn't deserve the TNT title, even though people want him to see. And Miro is just a fantastic, fantastic champion. He is, for my money, I said this, he's a guy who was kind of like Bayley last year. You don't notice how much he's improved because he was always kind of good, but he's gone from good to great. He nails it every single time on the promos now. You're not going to give him the big belt because that's going to be for your Omegas and your Danielsons and maybe Punk. I think Punk's kind of there to be second billing from here on out for the most part. And I think he knows that. And I think he's good with that. I mean, Hangman, you still have to coronate Hangman at some point. I think.
Yeah, but I think he's going to be out for a minute here, but like,
yeah, he is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with you. The tag team titles are a perfect vehicle for Jack Perry. He needed to win now. And I think that in the tag team titles, what the perfect story here is Jack Perry actually carries Luchasaurus. Yes, Luchasaurus is the big guy.
Yeah.
He has his good spots, but you need to show Jack Perry is the future breakout star because, yeah, Luchasaurus is good and certainly good in the presentation, the way they present him, but Jack Perry is the guy who wins the matches. Jack Perry is the guy who comes to the rescue of Luchasaurus.
Yes.
Jack Perry is the hot tag.
Yes.
That is how you do this. If you want to set him up to be someone who can go for the big belt at some point in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, you had to transition him from being Ricky Morton in those opening minutes of a tag and getting the, you know, getting the sympathy type of thing. You know, I'm just kind of going around here on AEW. I don't have a lot of heavy thoughts. I thought both shows were pretty fantastic. I loved Giannis Antetokounmpo, however you say his last name, marking out in the front row of Rampage tonight. That natural energy. He may have been playing it up a little, don't get me wrong, but he is, to me, a lot of that was genuine. That was a better reaction and got me more hype for wrestling than anything on SmackDown tonight. I loved that. And I think it makes
cool. Great star power. I agree. It makes wrestling cool. It's more synergy between TNT, the NBA, and and AEW, which is good. And having that relationship with the NBA goes back to making wrestling cool. The fact that like AEW does have access to all these cool basketball stars are not necessarily going to hop into the ring, but they do from time to time. And they might make an appearance on an AEW broadcast, either in the audience or maybe on commentary like that. And when basketball season comes back, you'll have even more of that synergy. That does help to make AEW cool and relevant. I completely agree.
You have crossover potential still with the NBA on TNT. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the AEW guys can also show up in the studio doing TNT bits and that sort of thing, and they probably will.
Everybody except Jericho. I'm forbidding Chris Jericho from being in any broadcast bits, anything like that. Oh my goodness. They go, if I lose this match, I have to go to commentary.
Delivery.
No.
I have never been cheering so hard. Last week, I'm like, I can't cheer for Chris Jericho. This week, he's like, if I lose the match, I'm going to commentary. I'm like, Chris, you got to win. You got to win, man. Please. Because he's horrible. He's gotten worse. It's the way he punches words in the middle of sentences. And like it even on a broadcast TV, even if you've got the compressor on the TV, it will still push into the headroom of the compressor. Because Jericho likes to punch right in the middle of a sentence like that. It's so annoying.
Yeah, and where he's making a point, he's really trying to force it in within like 2 seconds, like, and it just
micro stunt. What a little pest!
Yeah, God, I got to root for Jericho on Labor Day. We'll have a preview of that. Any other AEW hits you want to get? I am
absolutely. I actually really like the Varsity Blondes. I think they're coming together nicely.
Julia Hart brings that team together and makes them something, I think.
I totally agree. There's just like there's a vibe with that team. I'm like really hopeful about them. I do need to talk about Britt Baker because I think the way that they are handling everything in the women's division right now is an absolute mess.
I agree.
Pittsburgh screwed everything up. And everything is playing out exactly as we said it would after the Pittsburgh show. Now, yes, it is great that Britt Baker has a strong resonance with this fan base. We've went on the journey. She's now a baby face. And she should have completed that transformation in Pittsburgh. I would have belted Red Velvet because I just think that like now Britt has achieved something else, which is fan connection. So she doesn't need the belt, and the injustice will make us connect with her even more. Red Velvet, this is the other part of it and why it matters. She was getting booed out of the building in Pittsburgh. And although I know I was told that was just a regional thing, it turns out that the rest of the country has not gotten that message. And Red Velvet is now getting booed everywhere, including during this match against Britt Baker's illy casted heavy. Not that Jamie Hayter is bad. She looks great. She's come back and she looks sharp and all of that. But Britt Baker, newly transformed babyface with her kind of hapless boob sidekick rebel, did not need a heavy. Britt Baker, like, because the whole gimmick here is that the heavy is going to turn on Britt Baker. We're already a little bit ahead on the story too, right? And the problem with that is that when Dr. Frankenstein's monster, who's not called Frankenstein, that's a mistake that people make all the time, happens. Dr. Frankenstein's monster. When Dr. Frankenstein's...
The monster.
When the monster turns on Dr. Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein in this story, Jeff, is a heel with no foresight, which is not a sympathetic figure, which is the exact wrong casting for Britt Baker. Did I mention that Red Velvet is getting booed out of the building? That they were cheering for Jamie Hayter during this match against Red Velvet, which, oh, by the way, Red Velvet lost in short order without much of competitive fanfare and with the crowd having fully turned against Red Velvet. This is an absolute mess. And while AEW has done some things very right in recent weeks and the ratings reflect it, the way they are handling this women's division right now by any objective measure is an absolute mess.
I more or less agree. I watching the Tay Conti Bunny match tonight, that was also it's not firing on all cylinders, let's put it that way.
Penelope Ford and the Bunny as a pairing visually works really well.
It's to set up for Anna Jay coming back too, and I'm good with that. We'll see how everybody works together, but I'm fine with the story and going along with it. Two stories of interest to my personal fandom. I hope that this Cash Wheeler thing is a work. I really do. My brother broke his arm as a young child falling off a 3-meter board, and they said it wrong. And then he went to a doctor and they said, hey, we can try this thing, but it's going to be risky. And they said it, and the nerve endings never grew back the right way. And so he lives with a kind of a dull pain, like your arm's asleep at all times. That's his arm. I'm hoping that this is just, hey, we're working this injury for little false sympathy, and it's going to turn out he's going to be okay. But if this is truly their last match, because he can't go full time because he's worried about the hand, it's been a hell of a run for FTR. They are my favorite tag team. I've said this over and over again.
It's a shame that the AEW run has not been more. If this is really the end. When they did that, I'm hoping that it is false sympathy. But I don't know if you know this about me, but on my guitar hand here, years ago, about 10 years ago, I had I was cleaning stuff and a piece of glass broke and sliced open this finger bad. And it was a mess, and I have nerve damage in it, and to this day, like, this side of my finger is, like, I don't feel it. And it actually took me a long time to sort of adjust to not feeling, and, like, I mean, at this point, I'm a better player than I was back then, obviously, so, like, I got over it, but, like, I still have full feeling. So nerve damage can be very real and hard to fix and tricky. And if that is the case, God, I really feel for the man.
Yeah, Chris, when I stick my middle finger at you, I don't feel it either.
Look, dude, I've done it so many times with you. It's absolutely painless for me. All right, you know what, Hawkins? It's time for you to say goodbye, and it is time for me to say hello, Fresh. That is right. This week's sponsor to Shake Them Ropes is HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip the trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and, I'm going to say like Jericho, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. All right, so guys, fall is busy. I don't have kids, but maybe you do. Look, the commuting, you might be going back to the office. Maybe you got school board meetings. With HelloFresh, you can save time that you would otherwise spend meal planning, shopping, and chopping. So you can get back to what matters, which is the 20 hours of wrestling that is on every week. So with HelloFresh, the food's coming right to your door. HelloFresh's family-friendly menu is a big win for the back-to-school season with easy and delicious recipes for drama-free dinners. Lord knows, I hate a drama-filled dinner. Well, I don't know. Drama-filled dinners can be all right. Here's the more important thing, though. Every so often when you're cooking, I like to cook a lot. cooking by your own hand can sometimes get a little bit boring. And what's great about a service like HelloFresh is that they have over 50 different menu and market items to choose from every week, including vegetarian meals, calorie smart choices, extra special gourmet options. There's something for everyone to enjoy with recipes that are designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity. So, I mean, for me, HelloFresh, I think, is a good deal. And if you're interested in doing HelloFresh, you're going to go to HelloFresh.com/VOW14, and you're going to use the code VOW14. The 14 refers to up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. So, again, you're going to go to HelloFresh.com/VOW14. That's VOW14. And you're going to use the code VOW14 there. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. You say goodbye, and I say HelloFresh.
Yeah. Good job on that. Well. We'll get you some more ad reads to run. We gave the people what they wanted because they were tired of me reading them.
That's just a C major scale. That is not in relation to any song that has ever been written or will ever be written.
McCartney's lawyer is coming to break your legs.
You cannot own straight eighth notes in a C major scale.
Brock Anderson, the other Brock. Some might say the lesser Brock. I needed more murder death from Malachi Black.
Oh, from Malachi Black. Interesting. I needed more from Brock Anderson. I thought that, he obviously shouldn't have won the match, but right. I think that we needed more of a story. We needed more drama. Yeah. And I thought that this was too once. Brock Anderson needed to have, I'm fighting for my father. Attacked my father.
Energy.
And it should have at least put Malachi Black into a regroup mode. And then Malachi Black should have absolutely overcame it. Shoddy Lee Johnson showing up too lands flat for me. I think where we're going with this is that Shoddy Lee has a slightly more competitive match than Brock. And that's sort of the problem for me. I'd rather have Malachi take out Shoddy Lee, and then Brock has a more competitive match than Shoddy Lee because he's fighting with this chip on the shoulder of avenging his family versus the way we're getting this story. So just a little flat for me.
I needed Arn in more peril. I needed Brock to be... I wanted the entire action movie. This is where I, quote unquote, kill your son in front of you type of energy. I needed this to really just hit home, and it didn't for me.
Another problem is that the fans were not behind Brock.
No.
For as strong, and Arn's supposed to be a character with strong resonance for this fan base. The Horsemen are supposed to be respected. Like, Brock has a dope theme song. Brock on his way to the ring, like, yes, he should have lost, but like, this match should have been a vehicle for the fans to really latch onto this guy and want this guy to win, even though they knew and they know he shouldn't win and isn't going to win. This should have been the first portal for us, especially on this like debut of like new fans coming in, everything, to latch onto this guy and go like, I'm here for this guy. I like this guy. And the match didn't really offer that opportunity. And worse still, and this is kind of like the Britt Baker thing, we're now got this like cool heel thing going on with Malachi Black. And this is why I say that Daniel Bryan's debut needs to be interrupted by Malachi Black. And that's the feud that needs to happen, because we need to hate Malachi Black. And I think the only way we're going to hate Malachi Black is if he is going up against a CM Punk, if he is going up against a Daniel Bryan. And that's, unfortunately, where this Black character needs to be slotted. I say unfortunate because he's supposed to be a heel, and at this point, he's on the verge of being turned, and they're not trying to turn him.
Yeah, it's almost as if everybody just wants to root against anybody having to do with the Rhodes family. It's a little disconcerting, to be honest with you. I don't understand the bad blood with them, but nevertheless, as we move on to the to the E, SummerSlam, the now number 3 pay-per-view in the lexicon of WWE, used to be number 2, dropped to number 3.
So it's WrestleMania, Crown Jewel, and then SummerSlam?
You know, it might be number four now, come to think of it, because it might be Money in the Bank might be more important now than SummerSlam. But it's, you know, it's WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, and then the quote unquote summer WrestleMania, SummerSlam. Chris, we need to talk about this Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch thing. We have to. It baffled me. It absolutely baffled me.
Am so glad you brought this up, Jeff. Here's the thing.
Chris, who is that? Because not everybody's watching.
I know.
In audio form.
Here's the thing. Kenny, you were at best a 5 out of 10 gag last week. I'm not really sure why you're back. I still have things to say. Okay. Jeff, we need to see where this thing goes.
No, don't you dare say that.
Here's the thing. They're telling a story.
Canny, are we here to let things play out? Or are we here to...
We just have to let this play out. No, we have to trust the storytelling. No. We don't have all of it yet.
Look, you are 1 week old. And yes, we are beating this dead horse into glue. You don't know. You've never watched it play out before, Canny. You are a child. You're a damn child. You're a fraud. No, your daddy doesn't love you. Wait, hold on. I'm projecting. Anyways, look, I'm yelling at a can. What are you doing? Look, you call buying into the bit way too much, Hawkins. No, you can't let it play out because it's never played out well before. Ever. Look, okay. Number one. Let's think about this. Sasha Banks, we don't know what's up with her. The fact that they knew going in to this event and they still played the video package anyways is, to quote the movie Dragnet, underrated film, balls as big as church bells to do that. And then to pull, we're going to bring Carmella out to fight Bianca. And then it was Becky Lynch. All right.
Then Becky Lynch beats Bianca in 26 seconds.
26 seconds. And apparently she's a heel, which we will quote our sources from WWE. About 50% of the bad ideas are Vince's, and then the other half are talent pitching something and letting him run with it. Apparently this is Becky's idea because she hates money. She never got the full run with the full crowds, really, as the top person, because COVID and then pregnancy cut her off. Well, and I get that it's more fun to be a heel in the WWE because
this is Becky's idea. Becky has to be aware what she is doing to the performer who is Bianca Belair now, which is absolutely 100% kneecapping her. And Becky has been in this company and in this system and is familiar enough with these booking patterns. Canny is only a week old. Canny doesn't get it yet. But, like, we have seen
Canny's adopted. And it's real bad.
I don't love Canny. I don't love him.
Okay.
I'm just going to say it. Like, you can't love all your children. I don't love Canny. But beyond that, Becky knows what she's doing to Bianca here. So hearing that makes me really begin to question malice, because it's so hard for me to believe ignorance.
No, I'm not going to go there. I think that
you really think Becky is not aware that what she's doing is sabotaging Bianca's push?
No, because I think she thinks that she's smart enough to figure out a way to work with Vince to make Bianca look good after this. I don't think there's malice in Becky, because this was kind of a thrown together thing. She wasn't supposed to be here at this time either. And you remember she was originally penciled to be Bayley's opponent at WrestleMania. She still may not be physically cleared to go. And that might be, I mean, she could do like one or two moves or whatever, but here's the most baffling thing about this, because WWE has booked baby faces so poorly, and Vince has pushed characteristics on baby faces of being absolute jerks for the last 25 years, that in order to do this, she has to be so vile and do something so evil to Bianca that this crowd would have turned on her. what she ended up doing was something in the vein of Stone Cold Steve Austin, don't trust anybody, or The Rock, or the RKO out of nowhere, where people are going to cheer that kind of dumb thing. Now, here's the other thing. You don't do this at the number three pay-per-view in your canon with a big full stadium, your big first big full stadium of the year, to your up-and-coming rising star who got all this great publicity off of WrestleMania and how historic it was, etc. This is where you have the big match and she loses, and maybe she loses by Becky cheating or Becky doing something vile to her. This is not where you start the story by beating her in 26 seconds to the cheers of everybody in that stadium who loved every minute of it because they got to see Becky Lynch and she won the title. This to me screams cooling off Bianca Belair. And to prove that, canny, I let it play out until Friday. And how did they start this? They started this with Becky taking a powder from having the big match and having Bianca basically have to beat people she already beat. And not only that,
but Bianca looked very strong in going over multiple competitors.
Karrion
Kross.
Let's talk about that for a second, canny, because as soon as Bianca got the 1-2-3, it was 1-2-3. What a showing for Liv Morgan. That was the commentary. I could not, my jaw dropped. Who are they trying to get over here?
Liv Morgan was the focus of commentary throughout the match.
Yes.
Like, even Kevin Owens was like, well, you'd be underestimating Liv Morgan.
Oh, she's
like
losing here. We got to build her up.
Yes, the story was Liv Morgan, it looks good in defeat when, I mean, again, if this is, let's see where this goes. Are you sure? No, shut up, Kenny. If we're talking about, let's see where this goes, what should have happened tonight is Bianca should have came out and just been putting Becky Lynch in a corner.
Yes.
And talking about, for all your bravado, for all your talk about the man and respect and blah, 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 mm-hmm. You don't actually have any. And you want respect. It needs to be earned. I mean, I also would have done the match differently, right? Like, if Becky's going to come out and win that title at SummerSlam, she needs to come out and basically, like, nakedly cheat on Bianca. And then Bianca needs to actually be getting the upper hand on Becky in their match until Becky cheats yet again to win the match. Like, Becky should not be winning, should not have been competitive throughout the match and won basically by a fluke. Coming out there tonight, acting like she's the man, like she really did something when she won by a cheating fluke. And Bianca is there, the wronged individual.
Mad as hell.
Mad as hell.
Smiling, coming out, not doing any of their...
And Becky is visibly scared of her.
Yes.
And Becky, for all of her talk about being the man, her tune changes immediately when Bianca is out there, and Becky is scared. But instead, the Goober Squad comes out and stands in the ring, and they have their little Squabble Squad moment, and Bianca is standing between the Squabble Squad and Becky Lynch, the champion, as that in-between figure, and then Bianca has to go and sit with the kids' table. She doesn't go, you know, Bianca's like literally saying to Becky, like, let's get our own adults table. Becky's like, nah, I don't want an adults table with you. And Bianca's like, okay, I'm going to go and sit at the kids' table with the Squabble Squad. At least we get sippy cups.
You know, Becky was the most beloved babyface on this roster when she left. I just, the absolute baffling decision, be it Becky and be it not Vince saying, are you crazy? Do you know how much money I'm going to make with your return? To swim against that tide, Chris, I don't understand it. It's not just the financial
aspect. The most likely outcome of this is that Becky gets turned faced. Yes, Becky gets turned face by the crowd and Bianca is deep pushed and maybe turns heel within 6 to 8 weeks.
Maybe turns heel. And yep. She's a good heel. Don't get me wrong.
She's a good
Bianca
heel.
She's a fantastic heel because she has the ponytail. She can cheat. You know, she has the...
But the whole point of turning her heel would be to put her on a journey to turn her face to make her champion because people would want to see her champion, which they already did.
We did.
And they already kind of do.
We did nothing with the goodwill of Bianca after Mania. And we're doing nothing with the goodwill for Becky coming back.
And there is a non-negligible contingent of fans who are mad at Becky and not in the heel aspect, but in the like, we're upset that Bianca has been de-pushed sort of aspect.
Yes.
And so, like I this just an unbelievable mistake in this women's division.
This SummerSlam overall just set this women's division back 2 years to me, because then you get it to the other side of the equation. Charlotte Flair's our champ again. Charlotte Flair cut your basic Charlotte Flair promo on Raw. I respect the hell out of her athleticism. This character is dreadful. This character is bad. And it's not because I'm annoyed by her on the promos. It's because every promo is the same and it never says anything. It never goes with it. I could not believe the ending to this match. The ending to this triple threat match. Number one, Rhea Ripley, just out there to basically catch people. That's all she was out there for. But Nikki Cross, Nikki A.S.H., whatever you want to call her, at the end, she's making her big comeback. She goes up to the top rope, and Charlotte Flair just olays her out of the way, puts on the figure eight, tap out. This is what you did with your Money in the Bank. This was your big plan for your Money in the Bank briefcase to, quote unquote, make a new star. Was you made this superhero look like an absolute geek when the person she was attacking just stepped out of the way while she flew onto the mat, puts on the submission move. One,
let's
two.
Let's see where it goes.
You can kiss my ass, Kenny. I find her
to be inspirational.
Oh, well, let's talk about we did see where it went. Where did it go on Monday, Kenny? It went with a can they get along tag team with Rhea Ripley. Are you ready for the?
It's RK Sis with Rhea Ripley being the cool character and Nikki A.S.H. being the dopest.
Yes, they're running the same angle twice on the same show. I can't, Chris. This Raw, I watch in silence sometimes because I can tell what's going on and I'm just like, I don't even need to hear them try and sell this to me. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
We're getting very close to me doing what I did sometimes when I had to watch Lucha Underground and a certain commentator was just driving me insane, which is I might just invoke Black Sabbath rule here and put like music on while I watch the wrestling and no longer force myself to suffer through the commentary. It's not worth it.
The only other match even worth commenting on to me, I mean, look, after that Bianca Belair match, there was a dead period of about an hour on this pay-per-view where, you know, Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre. And don't get me wrong, Jinder Mahal over-delivered for Jinder Mahal, but it was still just like, I mean, this crowd wasn't into it, whatever. I liked Roman Reigns and John Cena. I did. I thought it was a pretty good match. God bless Cena. He saved his hairline, but he hasn't saved the back door just yet. That's all I was saying during this match. But
that was cracking me up. It's just like he did.
Work, he has that Rick the Model Martel thing going right
now.
Yeah.
But beyond that, no, like talking about the match, dude, Cena for a guy.
I bought in Cena winning.
He was good in this match though. Like the work was high level stuff for John Cena, a guy who is a part timer. That being said, the fact that he is not going to be there anymore and the promos that he did that actually did mention CM Punk and stuff, the kind of the vacuum left by Cena, I think, is bigger than the benefit that Cena brought to that title picture, mm-hmm. which only I think got further muddied by Brock Lesnar, who it will be interesting to see if Brock really has staying power with these fans. I think he's miscast here. I think Brock's...
That's my question, because he comes in there and he they didn't show this on the pay-per-view, but they showed this on SmackDown tonight. He goes in there, he starts suplexing John Cena all over the place. Now you can say, well, that's a callback to whatever, but is he going to be kissing baby, high-fiving, taking photos, doing make-a-wish appearance? Happy babyface Brock, or is this going to be Stone Cold Brock Lesnar, where you know he's kind of a heel, and although he's not going to be around that much, because it looks like he's on the Brock Lesnar schedule, which I assume means waiting for Saudi Arabia while we get rid of Prince Finn Balor, you know, and for the meantime. But is he straight on babyface, or is he going to be like just he's going to be Brock, but he's just going to be put up against Roman?
Yeah, I think he's just going to be Brock and put up against Roman. I do think they probably put the belt on him at some point, but maybe not in this feud. I don't, you know, maybe they do something at Mania. Maybe they're setting up a Lesnar-Lashley sort of thing at some point. But yeah, I this was a mistake to me. I mean, look, you know, you mentioned them calling in Brock. I said last week before I knew that Brock was coming back that I didn't necessarily think he was going to be the needle mover he was 4 or 5 years ago. I think that Brock is more than Goldberg, but if you want to think about Brock's value at this point to the company and to a wrestling organization going forward, it's like a super Goldberg. It's like a guy who can come in, have a really dominant and fun to watch 5 to 7 minute match. You put him on a streak, and then you have your baby face of the future that you want to build beat Brock Lesnar. And that's really the one story Brock's got left to tell, especially with this limited schedule.
That's the one story they never tell, though, because remember, when Brock broke the streak, he was supposed to lose to Roman. Didn't. Every time they get the, okay, here's the new babyface who's going to beat Brock or whatever, they always have Brock kill him. See, Kingston, comma, Kofi. You know, there's no babyface that's ever going to kill Brock other than a guy who's 6'9", 275 pounds like a Drew McIntyre or whatever. So, you know.
Well, now that Brock Lesnar's back in WWE, Kofi Kingston can have the rematch and get his heat back.
Yeah, Xavier Woods says hello. He beat the champ. Still hasn't gotten a title match yet. Yeah, no, the Goldberg match was garbage. It was just such a stupid plan to do that.
The finish to the Goldberg match got progressively dumber as So the idea of Bill Goldberg getting a leg injury and we see vulnerability in the now 55-year-old Goldberg, who has arms and legs and elbows and knees just like everyone else, and they age just like everyone else's. That part of the story, clever. Plus, thumbs up. Chris likes that part of the story. Where this match fell the hell apart is how they ended the match, which was by referee stoppage. If you're going to have him not be mobile anymore, just have him not be able to answer a 10 count because he's so busy outside of the ring. Having this end with ref stoppage made him look too vulnerable.
Ooh, ow, my knee.
Also, then we get to the MVP in Goldberg spot, the pivotal spot with the cane, which looked, I mean, God, it was Raider Wolfcastle with Radioactive Man trying to sell something. Yeah, like...
Al Cervic and Caddyshack. Oh, my arm.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, add to that, like, the selling was okay. I like the spots outside of the ring with the fireman's carries and the knee into the post. Yeah. Those are cool. But then you get to the Gage Goldberg spot at the end of the match, which was ridiculous. If anything, this needed to be, you know, Luke Skywalker after seeing Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru's place destroyed and knowing that Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru are dead and like looking at all this stuff and he's like mad and vengeful. Instead, we skip all of those beats. We don't even see the he's mad, vengeful, tear-soaked. He jumps into the ring and then gets sunned by Bobby Lashley. And now I guess we're building to
stupid babyface syndrome.
Stupid, and then the MVP at the end grabs the microphone and does stupid heel syndrome, where he's like, "Oh God, I can't believe we did that to a kid." The guy jumped the barricade, Theoretically, Lashley is 100% the right. He doesn't know who's jumping him from behind. So Lashley throws off this guy who jumped him from behind, who shouldn't be in the situation in the first place. And it turns out to be this kid who's dumb. So it's stupid babyface syndrome. Then it's stupid, whiny, scared heel syndrome from MVP and Bobby Lashley. This whole thing stunk. I did not like this at all.
Yeah, and just to wrap up SummerSlam, did Edge and Seth Rollins moved the needle for you at all? Because I just kind of watched it and went, okay.
I respect the performance.
Yes.
But move the needle?
No.
No.
So the next night, we can now wrap up with our NXT/NXT UK talk here. We had TakeOver. Let me tell you, I had a good week this week. NXT UK, the neighborhood, whatever you want to call it, we get clowned on by being one of the only shows to review this week to week.
You all sleep on this quality promotion that turns in really good
Let me talk a little bit, because they all kind of go together. Valtor and Ilya Dragunov, manly match. Ilya Dragunov's chest looked like hamburger at the end. Gave a nice promo at the end. I loved this match. I adored this match. This was hose me.
I mean, match of the year. Like, at this point, it's the match of the year measuring stick for me. It's really hard to kind of think of another match that kind of supplants the level of work that I saw in this match. It was fantastic. It was a 5-star.
I'll circle back to it in a second. But on NXT UK, I'll even give a little bit of an honorable mention to Jenny and Eva Valkyrie in their little hardcore match. Not the greatest match in the world, but man, they beat the crap out of each other. And then Joe Coffey and Rampage Brown did some manly men, bad men doing bad things to each other. I adored this.
And just to circle back real quickly, I thought that Joseph Connors, for his part, did a fantastic job screaming various phrases from the cage.
Canny and Joseph Connor can go both go to the same place, and that is hell. No, Valtor and Ilya, again, just sublime. Just absolutely. I watched this match, and it was everything I wanted it to be. Ilya has this thing, and I'm sure it's because he's just getting the crap beat out of his chest. But when the eyes start watering and he's becoming the fiery baby face, it makes it so much more emotional. Like, he's in a real fight here because he's in so much pain. Ilya, we've said it here over the years, he has that tendency to get a little histrionic in his fire ups and his comebacks and his, when he sports entertainments it up. But I thought he was great here. And Valtor is Valtor, man. He is just the man. I love this guy.
I loved at the end of the match, the, like, he's in near tears, or he is in tears and just covering his face on the ground. It was fantastic.
Yeah, standing over Valtor with the belt like David and Goliath, which, of course, running joke here on Shake Them Ropes. Vince believes that was poorly booked. I mean,
clearly, like, it's a classic story, and when you tell this story well, it rules. And when you have a great giant and a great believable underdog who is finally getting over the hurdle, I mean, this is incredible long-term storytelling, and it's a rare example in WWE of a long-term story being told, and being told through the portal of not one, but two classic matches. Because Valtor Ilya 1 is just as essential watching as Valtor Ilya 2. Like, you can watch them both back-to-back, watch that package, go on this journey. Ilya has the breakdown. Like, they used NXT UK very nicely to tell various Ilya stories through this last year here. I mean, dude, this has been a very, very rewarding journey. And it is, despite this company, and by the very virtue of the fact that this little promotion, NXT UK, is not being featured as a revenue driver at this point. So it's being left to be booked in a way that most human beings would recognize who watch wrestling as a coherent wrestling promotion.
Rest of the card wasn't too bad either, I didn't think. I put this up there in almost the top of the second tier of takeovers, maybe low first. It wasn't something that I was calling all my friends to go watch, but every match here on this card was solid.
This is a good, like, farewell to NXT. Yeah. Cause it feels like this thing's going to really change and we're not going to be getting
when you watch
like
Tuesday, it felt like a farewell because, I mean, but we like Ridge Holland. He murdered death Trey Baxter on the pre-show, minute 45. These are the guys who are going to be looking for Ridge Holland and Odyssey. You know, Odyssey Jones not winning the futures contract surprised me, but I also just think they're going to use this dumb contract. I want to challenge Kushida. You're an idiot. What are you doing? Get out of here. Just starting from the beginning, Cameron Grimes and LA Knight, good for what it was. I'm not the biggest LA Knight fan. he played his part here and he did quite well. And he was taking some bumps there that were pretty good, but you know, it was the story match and it got where it wanted to be.
Yeah. You know, the Ted DiBiase angle is another rare example of good long form booking for a WWE product where DiBiase arrived. They did a bunch of vignettes with DiBiase. Cameron Grimes sort of completed his babyface transformation with the help of Ted DiBiase. I like the interesting, I didn't know if it was going to get off the ground, but I think they've managed to get the $1 million belt to be something that like actually works as a babyface character like trait, which is interesting. And I think Cameron Grimes is going to be really well connected with fans inside of WWE and outside of WWE for the rest of his career here. So I think actually, like, all things being equal, this is a good push for Cameron Grimes, however this plays out in the medium term.
Raquel Gonzalez retained against Dakota Kai. This match to me was all Dakota Kai carrying Raquel quite a bit. She is but she is a great ragdoll. And I was hoping she'd win. I understand why they don't. I understand what they're doing here. Makes me a little fearful for Kaylee Ray, because Kaylee Ray, you need some time and then you realize what a just a force of nature she is on the stick underneath the deep Scottish brogue.
Yeah, you get those extra syllables, but when you edit those out, man, there's a hell of a promo in there.
Yeah, she's really great. And I hope that she can bring it here in a feud against Raquel, because Raquel, the problem with Raquel is she's so big and she's so tall, but she doesn't... Her anger on the microphone. No,
the
comes
other
off
problem
fake.
With Raquel is that they are so non-committal as to, is she a babyface character, yes, or a heel character, yes, or a tweener character? And Kaylee Ray, yeah, she's presented as a heel, but there's like the fact that she's undersized and she's got swagger and she's got accomplishment and stuff sort of actually at this point is summing up to make her kind of a natural babyface. And I worry that. Well, I don't worry because I don't really have concern, but like I tend to think that Kaylee Ray will be received as sort of the nominal babyface in this feud. I mean, the same way that Dakota Kai, people were rooting for her because Raquel's not a strong babyface, she is a strong babyface, a too strong babyface going up against an undersized heel figure. And people, I know Vince thinks that David and Goliath was booked wrongly, but people seem to have a resonance with this story for some reason. It seems to connect with people, and people were rooting for Dakota Kai against Raquel Gonzalez, and I think that's going to actually probably only ramp up with Kaylee Ray.
Ilya and Walter, we talked about just 22 minutes of Wagyu steak, just prime rib, whatever your meat of choice is, whatever you like, it was the best high quality you can get. It just hose me. I watched that thing 3 times over the weekend. Because I loved that match so much. So much so that almost overshadowed Kyle O'Reilly and maybe Adam Cole's swan song in NXT. I found at least the third fall anticlimactic as hell. I did. I thought the match was fine. Street fights in NXT with very good technical wrestlers are a problem. Because to me, it's more they are concentrating on spots where you can do a move with like a chair as opposed to really trying to beat up a guy with a weapon or do a street fight type thing. And it takes me out of the match, quite frankly.
This is kind of like the MJF Jericho thing. It's just, yeah. Or Gargano and Ciampa. It just has overstayed its welcome. Every move that these guys could do to each other, I feel like they've done to each other. And so I went into this match with like an interest level of near zero, and I didn't leave this match going, God, give me more of this. I left this match relieved that it was over. And that's like, I
agree.
It's just a mistake to ever let any act or any booking or any program go to the point where the only kind of realistic outcome for the audience viewer is like, thank God this movie's over. God, I can finally go to the bathroom and watch the credits or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what we do with Kyle at this point. I really don't.
Are you trying to tell me he's not cool?
He's cooled off, Kyle. And after watching, we'll get a little bit into NXT after I finish this, but after watching the Diamond Mine, that Diamond Mine was all about, hey, here are your replacements, go trade them type of move. But to end the night, Samoa Joe is now your NXT champion after beating a very game to me, Karrion Kross, at least in the match. Karrion Kross can now go run off and wear demolition gear that Scarlett covered.
Goodness gracious.
Good Lord, did you see that outfit?
Karrion Kross really lit the world on fire on that Raw debut. I know. Like, the biggest dorkest in the world. I can't take credit for this, but someone else posted a clip from or an image from WCW versus NWO Revenge, which I have the cartridge downstairs, and I played it. And no, he looks like the Executioner, which was like sort of a creator wrestler that the THQ people made on the cartridge. Like that, you know, the Executioner's not even a real wrestler. So like the joke here, and the joke is unfortunately really true, is that Kross at this point is relegated to creator wrestler status, when the whole draw of this guy, the whole reason he might connect with fans, is he's supposed to have a cool entrance during which we, the fans, are supposed to process him and think about him as, whoa, this dude is cool. Like, think Aleister Black. Maybe you've heard of him. Karrion Kross is not
Aleister. I thought he was Vampire originally, because they were kind of doing the 50 Shades of Grey type of, you know, feel and stuff like that with the, you know, with Scarlet in the leather and all that other stuff. But, you know.
Yeah, well, Sinister, you know, yeah, I mean, Sinister, it's kind of like what they were sort of doing Sinister with Damian Priest. Yeah.
When all he'd say is TikTok, and he'd like jump Ciampa from behind and, you know, destroy him. I thought, you know, okay, he's kind of cool now. God, he's talking too much. He's LARPing this gladiator dumb gimmick. And then they're going to bring in Scarlett, thinking it's going to save him. And trust me, Vince is going to look at Scarlett. She's hot, damn it. And then want to break.
The worst thing that can happen for him is the "We Want Lana" treatment. Like, remember what happened with Rusev? We want Lana. Yeah, and
it's going to be, we want Scarlett.
We want Scarlett. Yep, we don't want Kross. And Vince is going to hear that one time, and he's going to be like, who is this Karrion Kross? He looks like an idiot.
Yeah, I just don't. Who do you put up against Joe that's worth a damn? That's my question. I mean, you know, yeah, they're trying
to find.
Who's
that guy? People. Who's that guy who won the Futures Tournament? Let's heat him up.
Yeah, we go to the NXT Weekly Show, and this was, my goodness. The one good thing.
It's certainly an hour and a half of television for me to watch.
It was time well spent. Legado del Fantasma, who I just continue. I watched that entrance, and I went, how do you miss on these guys? Because, my God, Santos Escobar just oozes money to me. Just the whole presentation with the mask and the poncho and being flanked by the other two with their masks on, that's a great presentation. And I do think that Electra Lopez, I believe that is her name. Did I get that correct? Yes. Electra Lopez is a fine addition to this. I do. I liked her in that. Who did she get way too much offense on in that squad? Was it Raquel Gonzalez?
She got way too much offense on the Tony Taya Valkyrie.
Oh yeah, Frankie Monet.
Yeah,
in her debut. Yeah, no, she brings the personality, and they're gonna need it with the female member of Hit Row. But the thing is, you can see what's gonna happen with this Hit Row thing, and I'm a little. Hit Row's going to go over Legado del Fantasma. And then eventually they're going to break them up to get Top Dollar, the big push. And all along the way, it's going to be Ashante the Adonis, just taking losses and losses and losses. And maybe even Swerve Scott as well, which worries me because Swerve is fantastic.
And Top Dollar's kind of okay. He's an okay promo, but that's like, he's an okay promo right now.
He's big.
He's big. He's big, and he's an okay promo.
Yeah, we're getting into the land of giants. We've brought back Birch and Lorkin to flank Ridge Holland so that they can be red shirts. Yeah, we can see how this also. And then we have Gargano doing his comedy, which is fine. I like his comedy. Don't get me wrong. You're doing Gargano and LA Knight next week. I understand.
But no, people are going to get sick of the workhorse red shirts formula.
Yes.
And I see a scenario, especially with the NXT audiences, who are a little bit different than WWE audiences, where NXT audiences start to reject the land of giants stuff and the you're crushing all these guys who can clearly work sort of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, at least AEW gives us some surprises from time to time. People who win out of nowhere. People who are, you know, they get their wins on Dark and Elevation and get up to a point. They're you can see the build there. But, yeah, any other thoughts on NXT this week?
Stinky show.
Yeah.
Not looking forward to it. I think the whole way that they're doing tapings and then trying to, like, avoid spoilers getting out, it's asinine. Like, if you're going to tape stuff, it's going to get out. The year is 2021, unless you're going to confiscate everyone's phone.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. They kicked out someone from, I believe it was Body Slam Net. It might have been Wrestling Inc. who they had been watching him since he came in and were watching him on the phone the entire time. Yeah, we don't want spoilers to get out, but hey, the spoilers got out and their rating was up. So, you know, people wanted to watch the follow-up of this takeover. I think this next week's show probably might die a death. But we'll see.
This is not a organization that needs less buzz on the internet right now. This is an organization that literally needs all the buzz they can get. And
screw,
like,
being fan friendly. They'll take what we give them and they'll like it.
and oh, by the way, when you say the ratings are up this week, the ratings are still only like 800,000.
Yeah.
You know, like at this point, they have clearly been outclassed in a sizable way by AEW's
Chris,
products.
Chris, the Performance Center is going to be bright and shiny, and we have a new colorful logo. It's going to be the happy NXT, Chris.
It's not symmetrical. I've already covered this.
Let's end it there. We'd like to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh. Use code VOW14, as Chris put it, VOW14, which popped me way too much, up to 14 free meals and free shipping. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. Just want to follow the show. It is at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are on all your podcast platforms, and we are on the YouTube at youtube.com/voices of wrestling. You want to watch us react and you want to see what this whole canny bit was all about. Donate at our page on Red Circle if you'd like. Patreon dormant for now. Chris has a different Patreon. If you want to throw a shoe a few shekels his way.
No, throw a shoe at me, by all means.
Yes, you know, well, you know, that's how they do it in other parts of the world.
We cover that on Don't Worry About the Government Sometimes, which you can find on don'tworry.tv, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify. If you want to see the video version of Don't Worry About the Government, you can see clips of it on YouTube by searching for Don't Worry About the Government. We do have a channel. Whenever I do like three-part things with multiple people, I put up the third section of the show, and all old episodes, a month old, you can see. If you want to watch stuff that's coming out live and support what I do and the works that I do, that is doable over at patreon.com/DWATG.
I'm flailing on the dismount, Kenny. Come save me.
I can't save you.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.